from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. State regulators have been conducting cursory and indifferent investigations of complaints against caregivers for the elderly, disabled, and sick, even when those cases involve suspected abuse or suspicious death. That's according to an investigation by the Center for Investigative Reporting and KQED. Documents obtained by the Center for Investigative Reporting also reveal the California Department of Public Health dismissed nearly 1,000 pending cases of abuse and theft over the past decade when the state was dealing with a backlog of cases. Joining us this morning to discuss the findings of this recent team effort are Ryan Gabrielson. He's senior reporter at the Center for Investigative Reporting, lead author, and led the investigation in this story. And I should mention that the Center for Investigative Reporting, along with ProPublica, is also doing a live online chat this Thursday on aging in America, and you can find more information on our website, kqed.org/forum. And welcome, Ryan Gabrielson. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Also have Mita Kim with us this morning, who's a KQED reporter and now the new FM reporter anchor. KQED contributed reporting to this story. And Mita, thanks for joining us here this morning.
Thanks, Michael.
Well, let me begin, if I may, Ryan, with you. This is a shocking catalog of backlog cases that were not investigated, that were shuffled off, that were handled by phone. It's all come upon us kind of like a tsunami here. Talk about how it all developed, if you would.
It all developed when last year I did a series of stories about the police force at the California's developmental centers and some people within the Department of Public Health system decided that it was time to blow the whistle on what's been going on within their agency. Now, this part of public health investigates the individuals, the nursing assistants who really provide care in all kinds of hospital and healthcare settings. And the first piece of information I got showed that there was a huge volume of cases that were being closed very, very quickly and that they were largely being closed without action. And that suggested to me that there was a problem when a year's worth of cases are being closed and, you know, additional cases are being closed in 2 years, and they're almost all being closed without action. And the number of revocations against nursing assistants is plummeting from about 28% of all cases down to 7% of all cases. That indicated to me that somebody wasn't doing their job.
And, Mina, you saw some of these internal case logs. I mean, they're pretty appalling, in fact, aren't they?
Right. One of the cases that we investigated was the case of a 95-year-old woman named Elsie Fossum. She was found lying in a pool of blood. Her face was very badly wounded, and there were strong suspicions from staff at the assisted living facility where she lived and the emergency room nurses who treated her that she may have been the victim of abuse. And these types of allegations should be investigated promptly, yet investigators at the Department of Public Health sat on this case for 6.5 years.
Well, you had admission of this, shall we say, lack of responsiveness by Ron Chapman, didn't you, who's head of public health?
Yes, he actually admitted that he was very concerned about some of the statistics that were coming out about the closed cases. One in particular is the fact that public health regulators are required, if they suspect any kind of criminal wrongdoing, to forward a case to the Attorney General's office. And, you know, 3 years prior to addressing this huge backlog, they had referred 88 deaths to the Department of Justice. The 3 years after they started addressing this backlog, they referred 14. And in 2011, they referred 2. Last year, they referred 3. And I think there was just nothing else he could say about those kinds of appalling statistics, except that they're very concerning and that he's looking into it.
Well, it also, I think, needs to be borne out that there was rarely action taken, even in the face, Ryan, of pretty damning evidence.
Well, that was one of the things that really stood out, was not only were they now these days shuttering cases very, very quickly. There was a period of time in the Southern California office where they literally just sat on cases. They ignored them, even when there was proven misconduct and abuse. We had one case down in Long Beach where a caregiver who was convicted of patient abuse in a sexual assault case was not stripped of his license for years afterward. He remained licensed for a long period of time after he had been convicted, and the investigator at the State Department of Public Health didn't even check on the case for years.
This is a case, I believe, where he actually urinated on someone who he was taking care of and forced her to perform a sexual act.
That was a different case. That was one of the things. I mean, some cases we were able to. One of the hard thing about when a load of cases aren't investigated, it's hard to determine on our end whether or not there was a problem there, whether or not it was substantiated. But that was that one of the, that case was part of a log of hundreds of cases that and one of the descriptions of it was, you know, the assailant had allegedly peed on and sexually coerced.
Hit as opposed to hit on. Yes.
Hit as a yes. No, it's a, it wasn't courtship.
Some of these are really dreadful. I mean, abominable. There's only so much you can say about them because they're horrible. But they're not. Public health now says it's doing something about the backlog, don't they, Mina? They say they're getting on these cases. They're assuring the public that this sort of thing is not going to continue?
They said that they are not building on their backlog and that they are very close to completely eliminating the backlog. But of course, that's where we were raising the problems because we were saying we were seeing that the statistics in terms of how many revocations were actually occurring as they were closing these cases rapidly was dropping rapidly. Ron Chapman says that cases that were closed under his watch and the determinations that were made on those cases, for example, that no action was warranted against a caregiver, for example, that they are being closed appropriately. But what you know, Ryan was finding in his internal in his analysis of internal documents is that these cases are being that the number of cases that are resulting in some disciplinary action is dropping. So it's very hard to believe that at the same time that you're addressing a backlog, that the number of cases, the number of revocations are dropping dramatically. It suggests that suddenly you've weeded out all the bad actors at the same time. And I think that's hard for people to swallow.
Well, just the numbers there. It's a steep drop in the number of abuse deaths that have been forwarded to law enforcement.
And in conducting interviews for the story, we interviewed Mark Parker, who had been the head of investigations for the Department of Public Health for a number of years, the past decade. And I asked him, what is going on here? How can you have this kind of rapid closure of cases and fall off in revocations? And his answer was, we're being ordered to close cases by phone, meaning that they don't go out when there's an allegation of abuse. They are not necessarily approved to go out to the field and interview people at the healthcare facilities.
Gather evidence, gather testimony, right? It's all done by phone.
Yes, sometimes just one phone call, open, close. Is there a witness? Does the facility think anything happened? The facilities themselves oftentimes have a stake in whether or not these incidents are fully investigated.
Well, sure, because if something's brought to light, it can make people not want to put their elderly parents or grandparents or relatives, friends, whatever, into these facilities. There's also a lot of cases of financial exploitation and taking advantage of people, isn't there?
Correct.
And also not necessarily being followed up to large numbers?
There is this approach appears to be being used across the board, whether physical abuse, sexual assault, neglect, and financial improprieties.
To add to what Ryan was saying about cases being closed at the desk, there was an office, or there is supposedly an office in Southern California that's supposed to be investigating cases within that region. And what we've found from visiting the office, Ryan visited it twice, I visited it once with him, is that there are no staff members at the offices. In a reasonable time of day, you knock on the door and there's absolutely nobody there. And when I
spoke, they're still getting paid, though, of course.
Right. And when I spoke with Ron Chapman, he was saying that he believes staff is down there, but he could not give a specific number of staff members who were down there. And so what we believe is that a lot of these cases are being handled from Sacramento, which then, of course, makes it even harder to do any kind of field investigation because they're all plane right away.
Am I incorrect in saying that some of this is disproportionately in the southern part of the state of California?
Well, the problems are disproportionately in Southern California because that was where they ignored cases for a long time. It's not that there aren't bad people doing bad things in healthcare facilities in the north. It's that they were ignored for so long in Southern California, and then they closed the backlog, and now there is virtually, arguably, no staff in the part of the state that has the most people.
Well, I noticed, by the way, CDC put out a report, which I'm sure you're both familiar with, about the best and worst nursing homes in the country, 16,000 nursing homes in the United States, and they gave superior grades to some and they gave inferior grades to other. California didn't make it in the top 10 nor in the top bottom, so it's somewhere in between, I guess.
Well, and when there is little enforcement taking place, that gives you little few metrics to measure with.
Well, this is an appalling problem. I'm actually going to open the phone lines, and I know that some of you have questions about this, probably stories, maybe even some hair-raising or horror stories of your own. But we're talking about a report that's been put out by the Center for Investigative Reporting, along with KQED, documents obtained by the CIR revealing California Department of Public Health has simply dismissed nearly 1,000 pending cases of abuse and theft over the past decade, and the state was dealing with a backlog of cases. It's also questionable in terms of whether or not they're doing the sort of job that they're being paid by taxpayers to do now, and you may want to weigh in here and join this conversation, if not necessarily to register your own responses, to perhaps tell some stories that you feel are relevant and pertinent. Our toll-free number is available to you now. It's 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your phone calls, so please feel free to join the program. 866-733-6786, particularly if you have a story that you'd like to make listeners aware of, or ask a question about what else was discovered in this report. And there is a lot of information, really, that's come out of this, a lot of, as we say, shocking and appalling information. You're also certainly asked to email us if you have something to say. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or you can go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQED Forum. A listener asked, do your guests have suggestions for fixing the problem? Are there any alternatives? Is it the institution or the employees that are responsible when something like this happens?
I think step one is to ensure that investigators working for the state are actually responding in person to serious allegations. I mean, you know, it's perhaps an oversimplification to say they just need to do their job. They need to make sure that the Southern office is staffed with investigators, and they need to respond to allegations of abuse and serious neglect in person and conduct thorough investigations and let the cards fall where they may.
And why aren't they revoking licenses? I mean, this seems to be at least one of the punishments that they have available to them, or one of the hammers, if you will, and they're going down in number.
If you're not gathering evidence in the field, you don't have proof sufficient to revoke licenses.
Could they be using a revocation of license more to a greater extent by gathering evidence simply by going out in the field and not making these phone calls to close cases?
Well, maybe? There's no question. I mean, there was a time not too long ago, and I think it was in 2006, before all the sort of everything hit the fan, so to speak, they were revoking upwards of 30% of cases. You know, they were ending with revocations. They were taking action against caregivers not too long ago. And then once they started moving toward to eliminate this massive backlog, and everything was being – all the cases were being moved through very quickly by phone, that you see revocations just completely plummet.
People want responsiveness from their government. They want to make sure that their loved ones are being cared for. And this is really just very disturbing on so many levels. The question is, how do you get people to act when they're not acting? How do you get people to do – I'm not only talking about government. I'm talking about the employees who are not at the desks when you go in, Mina.
Right. You know, one of the things that people have to do is to visit their elderly loved ones or their, you know, dependent loved ones frequently. Frequently and at different times of the day. One of the things that the person who actually led the Southern California Investigations Office said was that that you simply can't count on the government to take care of your loved ones, that even he who led the department that looked into these complaints of caregiver abuse said that he, you know, knows better than to put a loved one in an assisted living facility or a skilled nursing facility and not to visit them at different times of the day to ensure that different family members are coming to question the caregivers and the staff there frequently about the care of their loved one. It's about the family members being extremely vigilant.
Yeah, I saw his statements, and here's someone in a position of
exactly.
a public position saying you can't really trust the government to protect your loved ones, which is pretty shocking. But what also comes to mind here is in Australia, they did a study of abuse and discovered that there was an increase in the number of those who were receiving care who had dementia getting abuse. And in many cases, these are people who can't speak for themselves. I mean, they don't know that they're being abused, and their loved ones, you know, might see some kind of injury or something and say, how did it happen, and get just a phoned up story. I mean, this is very commonplace, I think.
Yeah, it's often referred to as gray homicide, where The victims can't speak for themselves. They can't articulate or even sort of reason through what's happening to them necessarily. And therefore, there's virtually no accountability unless a staff member witnesses it and turns it in and actually, you know, testifies against their colleague, which is also a very rare thing.
And against their employer.
And their employer, yeah. Yes.
Let me bring some calls in here. Tess is our first caller. Tess, welcome.
And therefore, there's virtually no...
Let me go to another caller because she didn't turn off her radio, which is what we ask and plead you to do. Jill, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering how it comes to be that these are... It sounds like they're only being investigated by the Department of Public Health and not by law enforcement. Is it because it's not being reported by the employees at the healthcare facilities? Because they're people. They're not just elderly people. Why aren't these being investigated when there's a clear case of assault with somebody bloody and beaten on the floor?
That is an excellent question. This is
Ryan Gabrielson.
They're supposed to call law enforcement whenever there is evidence of a crime. That was sort of the question that led into all this for me was what is the Department of Public Health, which is oftentimes the first agency contacted because they regulate a lot of the healthcare facilities. They regulate, they license a lot of the individuals. And so they are oftentimes the first one called in. if the facility hasn't called the police, the healthcare regulators are supposed to, which is why it was so shocking to us that when we looked at the numbers of cases that the Department of Public Health was referring to state prosecutors who, when it comes to elder abuse, they have a unit with 41 attorneys that is dedicated almost solely to investigating elder abuse. Their referrals of cases in the past 3 years has just collapsed, especially when it came to patient death cases.
They just dismissed 1,000 cases back in 2009. Dismissed.
Yes. Over the course of 2 years, starting in 2009, they just eliminated the backlog sort of by brute force. They moved through it very, very quickly.
I thank Jill for her question. Let me bring another caller in. Jacob, join us. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. I am actually a system engineer. I design and deploy all type of patient wandering and emergency call systems for, you know, variety of nursing homes up here in Northern California. And personally, I've never seen any abuse. But what I notice a lot of the time is a lot of administrators don't like us to install any equipment that allows archiving, meaning equipment that will allow information to be archived so it can be used later. They would like an alarm to happen. They'll respond to the alarm, but they don't want to archive the alarm as to what time it happened, who responded to it, that kind of event. Capturing information is just not very encouraged, I guess, in the industry.
That's a pretty revelatory remark. What do you make of it, Mina Kim?
Well, I wouldn't be – it's not terribly surprising. I wish I could say it was surprising, but
Of course, he also said he hasn't seen any abuse. You know?
Right. His statement, though, about record keeping and how appalling record keeping is either at the facility level and also at the regulatory level has also been mentioned by other people that we've spoken to. And I know that Ryan has a lot to say about this topic, especially since he was digging through so many files and trying to get, you know, more substantive information than was being provided.
Well, and so much of this information at the state level is protected by patient privacy or what they call patient privacy and other information which should be definitely in the public sphere, like a couple of the individuals that we were looking up in the course of our reporting, including the caregiver who was the last person seen with Elsie Fossum, who was suffered some pretty severe injuries. She has been erased from the publicly available database. So you can't even necessarily even look up these individuals to find out when they were licensed and whatnot. So record keeping is a severe problem, and I'm very interested to hear of that that even with for services like an alarm system, they wouldn't want a log of when that took place.
And this I mentioned, Chapman, the lack, the disappearance of certain nurse assistants in the database, a database that's used by employers to determine whether or not somebody's certifications are current and whether they've had any disciplinary action against them. And the fact that there are names that are completely gone. And all he could say is he's unaware of that going on. And, you know, if he finds incidents of that, he will try to address them.
You guys have really done some important work here, and I congratulate you on it. Let me go back to the Elsie Fossum case, though, with you, Mina, because took 6.5 years. This was his beloved librarian. I mean, read all about her case, and it was extreme. Why did it take 6.5 years?
Right. You know, when we posed that question directly to the person, both the person in charge of the department and the person in charge of the Southern California office who received the case, both of them blamed the backlog. Though that doesn't make it excusable. And the fact that the case was closed 6.5 years later with a determination, you know, that was this February it was closed after the incident took place in 2006 with a determination that no action was warranted against the caregiver, you know, I guess 6.5 years later, it would be difficult to put together a meaningful investigation. And so that's what's so appalling about this particular case. I spoke with the family of Elsie Foss, and Ryan and I both, you know, flew to Minnesota and spoke with the family. And we were sharing with them information about their aunt's death. They were given so little information about what happened, which is part of the reason that they didn't really feel sure about what exactly happened to her and you know, what their rights were in terms of demanding more action on their aunt. They were under the impression that it was a severe fall and that the lack of any information or investigation related to abuse meant that, I guess, that must not have been what happened, was sort of the conclusion they were left to draw.
Yeah, they stopped hearing back from investigators with the state pretty early on, and they never received the conclusions.
And don't you also have cases where somebody would essentially be, there would be evidence, there would be the suggestion of abuse, especially in a couple cases that I was reading about sexual abuse, and then they just wind up at another facility. It's sort of like, you know, it used to be done in the archdiocese. You'd have a priest who'd be in charge of the abuse, he'd wind up at another church or another district.
That's very common, is that caregivers, when they get into trouble at one facility, the facility might let them go. And they'll just go on to another healthcare facility, either down the street. We found one case that it was taking the Department of Public Health so long to do anything that a caregiver moved to Washington State and got licensed there, and he's licensed there to this day.
Because the facility doesn't want, essentially, again, the bad publicity, or they don't want to go through the motions or whatever, and so they just let this person go scot-free.
And also, with, you know, in the cases where the new employer calls the old employer, the old employer just doesn't say anything because they don't want to be sued. They don't want to. It's just easier to say, we just let them go.
Yeah.
There's also the fact that there is a growing demand for these types of services. More and more people are getting older. More and more people are needing assistance. And so more and more nurse assistants are required to fill that need. And so people are, you know, due diligence in terms of their criminal background or, you know, employment history isn't always taking place.
Gina, join us. You're on.
Hi, this is Gina. I'm a social worker, and I see patients in the home, not so much in the skilled nursing facility. And oftentimes I'm trying to work with APS, and they're closing our cases in the home where we have two patients who are both clearly demented and have a dementia diagnosis, you know, using whatever excuse they can to say, well, they didn't let us in, or they said no to services. Well, of course they're saying no to the services because they can't make a clear decision and don't know it's unsafe because they've got poor judgment. And it's really frustrating to see people continually being abused, mostly financially, that we see, and the cases being closed for whatever reason.
Gina, I thank you for that call. I want to get to more calls here in a moment, but I want to remind you, you're listening to Forum, and we're talking with Ryan Gabrielson and Mina Kim. This is a fundraising period for this radio station, so for more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And do you want to respond to Gina? Let me get another caller on here, actually. And a lot of callers waiting, and I want to get as many in as we can, the time remaining. Mahasan, do I have your name pronounced right?
Yes, you do. Perfect. Glad to be on the program. Thank you for letting me speak. I'm an in-home caregiver with the state of California and in a unique position to see both sides, the professional side, perhaps in the nursing home issues, also hospitalization, if that occurs, and my client is taken to the hospital and then has to go back through a nursing home facility as her condition improves and then come home. There's a lot of transition involved, and I believe this is where a lot of the issues may come up, because hospitals and doctors, staff, and these people are not always talking with each other. It's rife with opportunities for medication errors. We had several medication errors that if I and the family had not been coordinating would have missed and would have reflected on the care of my patient. All I want to say to the listeners from a heartfelt point of view, do not trust anyone with your family other than you. If you have to use a facility, you have to be ready to monitor. You have to be ready to do all the things you just talked about, show up, meet with their caregivers in the institutions, ask questions, notice discrepancies, because it's like, I say, a preschool. You would not take a baby to a preschool and just walk away.
Mahasin, thank you so much for that. In fact, I'm looking at an email from a listener named Patricia who says, family should be their elder's advocate. That's been the advice that's been certainly crystallized here. But she goes on to say, however, when family complains, then it's up to the government to act and act swiftly. And another listener writes, the problem of elder abuse investigation and prosecution is symptomatic of the legal and justice system and society in general. One, laws on the books that you are unable to enforce. Two, not only do prosecutors have to do the hard, tedious work collecting evidence against abusers, but they have to fight a system that will not support or is indifferent to prosecution. Well, I think we've got time for one more quick call, and that's Carl. Good morning.
Good morning. Can we put this in perspective? Most cases of elder abuse happen with other family members being the perpetrators in the home, not in assisted living facilities. This includes physical abuse as well as financial abuse. Would you guests care to comment on that?
It's completely true. The vast majority, of abuse also takes place in the homes with relatives and is not necessarily involving home health aides and nursing assistants now. You know, the number of nursing assistants that are involved in care is growing with the growing population. But it's true and always has been true that most people, when they get old, are cared for by relatives. And relatives, for a number of reasons, frustration, the difficulty of caring, not to make excuses, but they are involved in a great many abuse cases.
And I thank Carl for the call. And I thank you both for the work you've done. Congratulations again. And I hope this really makes people mindful of that importance of vigilance and monitoring those they love who are being supposedly taken care of. Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you.
Ryan Gabrielson is senior reporter at the Center for Investigative Reporting, lead author, and led the investigation into this story. Mina Kim, KQED reporter and KQED contributed reporting to this story. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.